of what we've seen so far in terms of Zohar, and a little bit of what we haven't seen so far, meaning that we still have to finish the sugya, which God willing we'll do tomorrow. Tomorrow what we'll try to do will be kind of a transition that will finish up some points about Zohar, but most of what we'll discuss tomorrow, as far as I envision it, will also serve as an introduction to Borer. There'll be a lot of the issues in which it overlaps or doesn't overlap with Borer. So let's have that in mind for tomorrow. Again, the Zohar issues, but the ones that also serve as an introduction to the general Borer concepts. So a little bit of what we have talked about, a little bit we will talk about. So how does this affect our practice? So just first off the bat, so we did spend some time looking at the fact that there seems to be a machlokus between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and that the Bavli seems to see Zohar as a form of Borer, which would assume that, or we would assume reading that, that means we have to be separating some good from bad, getting rid of the bad so that we can keep the good. While the Yerushalmi has been understood by many to disagree by giving us this example of someone who spits into the wind, and that doesn't seem to involve the separation of any bad from any good, even though we saw many attempts to try to reconcile the two. There were major gedolim such as Rabbi Akiva Eiger and the Chayyadim and others who saw this as a machlokas, leaving somewhat of a question how to paskin. So there were many who paskined like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi, either because they rejected the Yerushalmi or because they reread it and reinterpreted it. And there are many major voices in that camp. The earlier sources, they quote the Ma'ari Kash and the Birki Yosef of the Chidah, who has this position. And we saw that both the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, which is not an insignificant thing, that they're both in agreement and from different perspectives to read the Yerushalmi and the Ramah, perhaps, who quotes the Yerushalmi, as saying something else, as saying not that there's an issue of Zohar involved, but that there's an issue of carrying, whether it's because you change the text like the Aruch HaShulchan does to read Zorek, or whether it's because you assume that it means Zohar just as an indication that you can use the wind to do a malacha. It was the way the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha quoted from the Sefer Alfei Menashe. So with all that, there is a very strong camp that doesn't think that this is a concern that has to be adopted. Ravadji Yosef is in this camp as well, and his Chuvasi Abiyah Omer, he basically takes the stance that he thinks there is a very strong view that the position of the Bavli is not in accordance with this consideration, and that that is enough to rely on. And there were those who were concerned about the view of the Ramah and Yerushalmi, as we saw, it's the Ramah seems to also be the Magen Avraham. Seems to be a few others, so therefore there were those who were choshesh to this. It's a little hard to count up exactly who, because sometimes, so for example, Rabbi Akiva Eiger is quoted as being one who takes this into consideration, because when he had his tshuva we talked about last week, about the water, so he emphasized that since water wasn't gedulei karka, that was one of the reasons to be mekel. So it sounds like he's saying that he thinks, at least on a level midrabanan, there would have been what to worry about if it was not a if it was gedulei karka. So that's where there's a little bit of a question how much to read into the havaminas and the masanim. But it sounds like there are those who level midrabanan thought that if everything else was in place, there was what to worry about. So this continues to be somewhat of an ongoing machlokas with those who are concerned about it on at least some level, with a very strong camp. And again, it's not a small thing that both the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan are in this camp, considering the concern of the Yerushalmi and the Ramah not to be as much of a practical concern. Nonetheless, the discussion comes up a lot. So, for example, the Sefer Ketos HaShulchan, which is Avraham Chaim Noah, a prominent posek whose name comes up very often in Halacha Shabbos. So he was of the opinion that throwing confetti into the air is a problem. We're using the wind to disperse the confetti. And there are those who came after him who discuss this in a little more detail. There is a sefer that we'll mention a few times this morning called Otzer's Tal, which is written by a Talmid Chacham by the name of Feldman. No relation, but he is related though to the Sefer Halacha Shel Shabbos that we've mentioned in the past. They're brothers, the Halacha Shel Shabbos and the Otzer's Tal, both fine Feldman Talmid Chachamim. But so the Otzer's Tal, the entire volume is all on Zorah. So he has a, this guy, so you think it's not a big walk. So he has the whole Sefer about this. So he has a little bit of a question on the Ketzos HaShulchan, who talks about confetti, says he's not sure what his reasoning is, because the Ketzos HaShulchan doesn't explain it. He's not sure if he's assuming that the paper involved is considered Gedulei Karka. It's a whole question how exactly paper is made. It's a Metzias question. We learn Hilchas Nida, so it comes up a lot to the question of whether or not paper is Makabel Tuma. So what exactly paper is made out of. So that's a little bit of an open question. So he's not sure what exactly is the basis of his position. Jonathan?
We said from the Michlas Ariel that it doesn't necessarily have to be Gedulei Karka, because then we would have to apply it to Borer.
We said that was a question he asked on Rebbe Akiva Eiger, but many did assume that Rebbe Akiva Eiger's concern is one to take into consideration. A lot of the later poskim did bring the Gedulei Karka considerations. The question in Lumdus, why it should be different than Borer. But this Gedulei Karka consideration was adopted by many. Hi. Same point. Okay, so among those who talk about this, so there is also a discussion that some of the Svarim have, which I think starts from the Drushas of the Maharshan. Let's say you take a tablecloth that has crumbs on it, and you shake it out outside the window in a way that the crumbs are going to blow into the air. So is that an issue of Zora? So here again you have some considerations. Are you trying to do it specifically because you want the wind to blow it around? Are you trying to just shake it outside of your house? Are you trying to really throw it towards the floor? So the Maharsham says it's a good thing to avoid. And here again, the Otzer's Tal has a comment where he also makes the same type of comment, that he's not 100% sure what his perspective is based on. And that since he doesn't have the Drushas Maharsham in front of him, and I didn't have the opportunity to see it inside either, he's not sure. Maybe his concern is that this was from his Drushas for Shabbos HaGadol, so maybe it's because it's Shabbos HaGadol, so maybe if it's a Shabbos, Erev Pesach Chal Yos B'Shabbos, or it's a Shabbos close to Pesach, so you want to make sure not only to clean off your tablecloth, but you want to make sure to get rid of your chametz. So maybe that's a concern, that you're really hoping the wind will blow away the crumbs. Maybe if it's a normal Shabbos where chametz is not as much of a concern, and your only issue is that you just want to shake the crumbs off of your tablecloth, maybe he wouldn't necessarily be as worried about it. Sammy?
But then that would be totally mutter with the Balam Or. That would be something good.
Assuming that you possibly the Balam Or against the Magen Avraham.
I mean, we have at least the Bach, so if you have the Bach, the Balam Or,
right, so as we saw, it's a little bit of a question who's right about that, right? So the Magen Bach follows the Balam Or, that should be okay, and the Magen Avraham didn't. But here also, there's a little bit of a bigger problem, that maybe it's one thing if you're taking crumbs and just throwing them into the air. But here, if you have your tablecloth and you want to keep your tablecloth and you want to send away the crumbs, so maybe that's more of an ochel and a psolas type of scenario.
Wait, the tablecloth is a tarot?
Possibly, and then there's also a question that you have to figure out. Maybe it makes a difference if the crumbs are stuck to the tablecloth or if they're just on top of the tablecloth. So there is a discussion about this. Jonathan brought me the sefer last week, Yerushalayim Mo'adeh, of Rav Nevinson. So he has a discussion about this as well, where he also writes that it depends whether you're trying just to drop them to the floor or to push them towards the floor, while if you're looking for the wind to help you, so he thinks also that should be a problem. And then there is a fascinating discussion in the footnotes. Aaron, did you want to comment on that?
There's not in terms of whether it's inside or outside, let's say with the confetti. Mm-hmm. You're going inside rooms, then it's not.
Yeah, so inside, so there's not going to be any wind at all, presumably, unless you have the windows open. So just to throw it up and throw it down, so presumably that's not an issue.
Even so if you want to... putting your pure, like, shaking on the tablecloth into a garbage can.
Yeah, so then presumably also that's not here, because that's even outside. That's as Rav Eversole points out, that even outside, if you're trying just to shake it down, then it shouldn't be a problem. The question is, what, maybe you want the wind to help. So he has a whole fascinating discussion.
So it's like a rough and really windy day, and like, obviously, wind's going to have some kind of role in taking it somewhere.
Right, so that gets into the psigratia concern, which is one of the points that Rav Akiva Eiger mentioned in his Tshuva about water, that even if it's not what you want, maybe you have to worry that it's a psigratia.
Yeah, it's getting windy.
And then the question is it nichalei or is it not nichalei? So presumably it is nichalei, especially on close to Pesach time, because you want the chametz to be farther away from your house than nearer. So if it's an absolute situation with the wind, then you probably would see those who would be more machmir about that. Hi.
Is this tak based on the Rama or despite the Rama?
It's not despite the Rama for sure. Why would it be despite the Rama?
Well, no, so then they're passing like the Rama, which we said was...
So he's taking the Rama into consideration, and then he mentions at the end that the Alpha Menashe says it otherwise, but he was choshish to it, at least on some level, as many have, at least on the level of the Rabbanan. Then he gets into a whole discussion also about how the Gedulei Karka component fits in here. And he says also, so you have to figure out, what is it that we need to be Gedulei Karka? Is it that we need the tablecloth to be Gedulei Karka, or is that we need the crumbs to be Gedulei Karka? So that relates to an issue, God willing, we'll talk about tomorrow. One of the issues that we want to get up to in terms of the lumdus of Zora and Borer has to do with when you separate two things, where is the malacha happening? Gets a little bit into the malacha shenitzvirka legufa question, which we'll get into a little bit more tomorrow. So is the malacha happening to the tablecloth, or is it happening to the crumbs? So he assumes, and we'll talk about the basis about this a little bit more tomorrow, that it would seem to be the tablecloth is really the focus. So then he says you have to figure out what's a tablecloth made out of. Is that Gedulei Karka similar to the paper question we mentioned a minute ago? And then, again, this is all the footnotes over there, he mentions an important position of the Egwe Tau, which would cast a different light on a lot of these questions, but it makes a lot of sense. He says all of these, if you assume that there's a Gedulei Karka consideration, a requirement, when we do require Gedulei Karka, what we really mean is that it has to be correcting a situation that was there when it was in its karka form. But if it's something that comes to it later, so then that's not called Gedulei Karka. Which kind of makes a lot of sense, because if you want to say that the distinction maintains forever, once you take something as Gedulei Karka and then you make it into something else and then you introduce a new factor and you want to fix it, so then it becomes kind of arbitrary. You're essentially doing the exact same type of action, just one thing has a history as Gedulei Karka and one thing doesn't. And it's hard to know why you should really distinguish. It just becomes a very technical distinction. But if you want to say that there's something inherent in the malacha, that the malacha is relevant in a karka context and not in a non-karka context, so that it does make sense to say that one should also really only apply this when you're dealing with a situation that's based on its Gedulei Karka form. So then there might be more room to say that other situations that are farther removed would be in this category. So for example, the classic Zora, where you're taking the things right out of the ground after they've been threshed, and you're throwing them up into the winds, then you're really dealing with Gedulei Karka, you're really dealing with a situation that was there inherent in the object itself. When you're creating a situation later and then you want to undo it through Zora, even if what you're dealing with, even if the ingredients on some level started off as Gedulei Karka, so maybe that still wouldn't make the standards. So that's an interesting position, and if you want to stick with that, so then that would farther limit, that would have an even greater restrictive nature on what's going to be included in this malacha. Hi.
That totally removed all tablecloth questions, because that has nothing to do with Gedulei Karka.
Take everything off the table. No,
I'm saying...
Right, so it sounds like, although he brings that consideration, and then if you look, he says something, he goes back to the tablecloth, so I'm not sure exactly how he's defining it. So you have to figure out practically, and it's clear that many others who considered this question weren't taking that into consideration, but there is a strong svara to it, because otherwise becomes totally arbitrary. You have two identical things, just one thing happens to have been made out of Gedolei Karka and one thing's made out of something else. Why should that necessarily be a different type of malacha? It's one thing you talk about Hilchas Tuma, okay, you could hear, right, it's a different material, it's have different rules in terms of being Makabal Tuma. But here we're talking about a malacha, the things that you're doing, so just because of the historical nature of the object, why should it be different? There is a lot of appeal to that distinction.
And then also, would the tablecloth issue necessary to connect to the Rama? Because there are many different types of crumbs that are on the table at once. So it could very well be that even without the Rama, there would be some sort of odor issue. I mean, you don't really
Except you have no interest in how they're divided up. Doesn't do anything for you. Presumably, you want to get rid of everything. It's interesting if you want to really get into the Erev Pesach considerations, you know, and say that you have crumbs that are chametz and that are not chametz, and that you only want to get rid of the chametz and you want to hold on to the non chametz. So there's a little bit more room to say that. Except even then, nobody's looking to daf to hold on to the garbage just because it's not chametz. So pretty much in all such cases, you want to get rid of everything. So that, to say that the taruv is there, would be probably harder to say. It could be that the tablecloth itself is the ochel, but to say that within the stuff you're shaking off seems a little harder.
If we aren't mapped before the Ramos, then would any of these be issues?
Well, so he's assuming that it would be because he's seeing the tablecloth as ochel.
Okay.
So he's seeing that as a borer position.
And then let's say it's artificial wind. Like, let's say, for example, you have a fan running in your house. You have one of those ceiling fans. Or somebody is blowing, you know, for the heck of it.
Right. So a lot of poskim do assume that artificial wind is included in wind. And it's two separate questions, artificial wind and the blowing. But artificial wind, all the more so. Later posts can assume you have a fan, something like that, that is considered to be wind. And when it comes to blowing, it's a little bit more of a complicated discussion. We'll see if we get to it today. We may get to it today. If not, we'll talk about it tomorrow. It has a little bit to the question of the surah of the malacha, which is one of the issues I want to talk about tomorrow. So either today or tomorrow, we'll talk a little bit about blowing.
Hi. I'm going to hoshish for crumbs maker again.
Yeah, no, you definitely want to get rid of it, Mitchum Pesach. So if that's the case, that's what is unclear in the original discussion. When the Marsham talks about it, it's not clear if he's saying it because it's Pesach, and therefore you have a special desire to get the crumbs as far away from you as possible, or is it because it's any type of normal tablecloth that you want to get clean. So that's what the later Svarim aren't sure whether the focus is specifically, should we worry about it. The truth is, Rav Nevensal doesn't really talk about the Pesach issue at all. As far as I recall, he's just talking in general. Somebody, Stam on Shabbos, wants to get rid of it. But the Maharsham, who talked about this first, so some of the later discussions about it, bringing out that issue, is it maybe because it was a drasha for Shabbos HaGadol? So maybe it was specifically motivated by a extra desire to have chametz disappear? Or would it be true in any context? And that's part of the discussion. But you're right, that Pesach is on the horizon, so they'd want to get rid of the chametz completely.
But crumbs in general, if they're very small, there's no real issue.
Strictly speaking, it should be batel. We try to get rid of the lechachila, but strictly speaking, it should be batel. We can talk more about that in detail when it comes closer to Pesach. But right, strictly speaking, it's not something people pay attention to, but lechachila, if it's possible, we try to get rid of them. Sammy, did you?
Yeah, I was just saying, Lamaisa, so we should not shake off our tablecloths outside.
Lamaisa, if it's not windy, it would seem that you certainly have what to rely on, because if you're not looking for the wind, and if the wind's not an absolute psikresha, even if the wind was a psikresha, there'd be what to talk about. But if the wind's not an absolute psikresha, and you're just looking for it to go to the ground, so that's what seems there is big basis to permit. One of the major discussions that the post can have concerning Zora has to do with spray cans. You have aerosol cans and you want to spray. So then, it depends sometimes what it is you're spraying. There could be other malachas involved depending on what you're accomplishing with the spray. But talking about it in the abstract, just the idea of expelling some substance from a can, which is going to now float out into the air, so is that a malach of Zorah? So here, the truth is, the overwhelming majority of poskim who talked about this were makel on this. Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted in a number of later works, such as Rabbi Eider's Sefer and the Sefer Shalmei Yehuda as being makel on this. Rav Yashiv is makel about this. The Menchas Yitzchak was makel about this, although he talks about other issues. He has a tshuva where he talks about perfume sprays, and he's makel from the Zohar angle. He talks a little bit about the question of being molid reach, which is a little bit of a different topic. But in terms of the spray can, he concludes that it's not the Menchas Yitzchak, and that's Dayan Weiss from the Eid Haredes. So many of the great poskim were makel about this. The Shemir Shabbos Kilpas was makel on this. Seems to be the overwhelming majority view that this is permitted. Why is it that this is permitted? So they basically assume that the way it works is that you are not using wind at all to disperse anything, that you have the contents under pressure, and when you push the button of the container, so it reduces the air pressure and allows some of what's inside to come outside. And therefore, they feel that that's not a concern, that that's not at all comparable to using the force of blowing wind to disperse something. There were those who were machmer. The Chuvis Kinyan Torah Bahalacha was machmer about this. He thought that essentially that's using your hand to do the same thing the wind was saying. That this was, he has the opposite point that Rabbi Akiva Eiger made from the Gemara in Bava Kamma. That we mentioned that Rabbi Akiva Eiger brought the Gemara in Bava Kamma as further proof that the Bavli disagrees with Yerushalmi. Because the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which talks about the wind helping out with the Zikin and brings a proof from Zohar, so Rabbi Akiva Eiger interpreted that Gemara to be saying that it's not that the wind itself is the malacha, it's that the wind is doing something that you would otherwise do with your hands. So since this malacha doesn't work with your hands, it only works through the wind, so therefore you can't say that it's following the vision of the Yerushalmi. However, the point that the Kinyan Torah Malacha gets out of that is the opposite. That apparently, if you could do this with your fingers, it would also be a malacha. So therefore, the fact that instead of introducing wind into the equation, you're using your finger to change the air pressure by pushing the button and dispersing the substance that way, so he thought that would also be a problem. Again, this is the minority. I think the overwhelming majority of all poskim saw this as mutter, at least assuming that there isn't any other malacha involved.
Just to be clear, because I don't understand the mechanism. Is it because when you spray it out, it goes through the nozzles which spread it, or because it spreads out through the air because of like gas laws?
Because the power of dispersion is not coming from blowing it. It's coming from the fact that it's pressurized within the container. And
right.
When you push the button, you're releasing that.
Right.
So it's not that you're using the force of either wind or artificial wind or your breath to disperse it. It's been dispersed by having its own pressure release.
But what's the separation they're talking about here? Because of the little holes in the nozzles that spread out? Or
no, it's not it's focusing on any separation
just
at all. It's saying that even if you want to say within the Ramah that's a concern, he doesn't necessarily, all these poskim don't think it's a concern. In the context of his point, while we're talking about the Ramah, so the Kinyan Torah B'Halacha and this Tshuva, just while we're mentioning this point, he also mentions that he thinks that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi could perhaps be brought somewhat more into sync, that maybe when we talk about Ochel M'Soles, it says that's a requirement normally because that's usually what we're interested in. We're usually interested in keeping Ochel and getting rid of P'Soles. But sometimes we are interested, Stam, in making things smaller. So when it comes to spitting, for example, so you want it to be less obvious, you want it to be less disgusting to people, so you do want it to be dispersed by the air. So maybe the times when you want something to be spread out into smaller pieces, that should also be included within a malacha like borer. Maybe it's not always objectively ochel m'solas, that's the issue. Maybe anytime you want something to be separated into smaller parts, that would also be involved. And therefore, he's not so sure the Yerushalmi is so different. But in any case, for a number of other reasons, he differs with the majority view, and he thought this was also a concern. Sam, you had a question?
Yeah, I didn't understand his point in the Bava Kamma.
His point is that you have to say from that Gemara, basically, to say it in a simpler way than we said it before, is that it sounds like from that Gemara that the Gemara is asking the question, what about if you use wind to help you do something you could otherwise do yourself? So it sounds like, right, so he's taking the flip side of it, but it sounds like if you could do this yourself by pushing a button, even without involving any wind, that would also be melacha. So that's how, even though the other post can say that it's not comparable to Zorah because you're not invoking the force of the wind, you're just using your button to unleash the pressure inside, he says that that's also what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that you're using wind to do what you aren't doing yourself, so here you are doing it yourself. That's how we understood it. But most of the questions seems to be there's an overwhelming majority that the later Sfarim quote in favor of the view that, abstractly speaking, this should be mutter. And Rav Ribiat, if you want to see more about how this works, so you should take a look in Rabbi Ribiat's book because he has pictures and he has an extensive discussion with diagrams of how exactly the pressure works to explain why this should be permitted. He then goes on to say, and I think it's the others who talked about this, that there are different types of sprays. And he talks about the Venturi spray, where he says that would be prohibited. That involves bringing air out from the outside and forcing that into the device in order to change the level of pressure within. So that's got a bulb outside of it. Instead of pushing a button that's releasing things from inside, you are drawing in air from the outside. So that, he holds, would be an issue. That is invoking the force of the wind outside. And he thinks that's an important distinction. Again, I didn't come across too many others who invoke that, so that's an interesting point. You find that less often today, but it does exist. And those types of sprays, he holds, would be a problem. He also then goes on to say that something that would not be a problem at all is the water sprays in your sink. So if you have a setting in the sink that changes the water from normal faucet to a spray, to like a shower format, he thinks that's not a problem at all because, again, you're not invoking the wind in any format and you really don't have any point of comparison between this and Zara, besides the fact that there's no Ochel Mitoch Psola, it's not Gdulei Karka, it doesn't look like Zara, so there's absolutely no concern here at all. Basically, it doesn't have any overlapping element with anything that we're worried about, so he's pretty convinced that that's Hadagama. Hi.
What about those bulb things that are used on little kids, like to clear out their nose or their ears?
It's a suction.
Yeah, so you pull it out, you pull it out, and then you squeeze it to expel the thing from in there. Would that be an issue?
It's interesting. So you're using that to pull out.
And that, like, and then to clear, pulling it out would be probably not an issue. But after it's in there already, you want to expel it so you could use it again.
Right. So presumably, pulling it out is similar to the whole air pressure situation where you're not the normal aerosol can situation where you're not using any blowing force to expel it out would just be, I think that would just be emptying something. I don't think that would be any different than...
Or it suctions, not wind anyway.
Yeah, I don't think that would...
Isn't the whole suction thing like the Venturi effect that Riviera was talking about?
There you're pulling in air from the outside.
But causing like negative pressure makes everything fly towards it. So it's not the same thing?
Doesn't sound like the same thing. I'd be wrong, you could ask maybe the physicist, but... I don't think it sounds like the same thing. Could look into it a little bit more, but it sounds like it would probably be mutter. Okay, so another major issue that post we talk about, also mostly to be makel, has to do with using a cold water vaporizer. And there you're pouring, if you want to add water to the vaporizer, and the water basically is turned into small droplets inside the vaporizer. So there as well, Rav Moshe Feinstein and many other poskim think that that is mutter in terms of the Zorek consideration because it is the centrifugal force inside that is making this happen. It's not the wind or any other blowing force. And, you know, again, also you could throw into considerations of whether water is an issue to begin with and whether this is a type of borer or not. So besides the other reasons possibly to be makel, in terms of just what's going on, so many poskim did not feel that there was an issue of zorah. There were us, or Moshe thought it was mutter completely. There were others who thought it was mutter mishum zorah, such as the Bear Moshe and a few others, who thought that Zohar was not a consideration, but that there were other considerations, that maybe it was a molid type of consideration, so that maybe if you're dealing with a chola, it could be makel with a shinoi and klachayah, that there were various ways to do it, but that it wasn't necessarily het tegomer. It sounds like for Moshe that it's het tegomer. And there were others who thought there were other considerations. Like Aaron was.
Is it humidifier? Or?
So it has to be. So assumption first, we're dealing with cold, that we're not steaming up the water. If you're steaming up the water, so then there are more serious issues in terms of bishul. If you look in the Otz Rostal, he has a whole discussion how he thinks you could deal with the issue of bishul. Talks about maybe you should cook the water beforehand, and then maybe that would solve the problem. Not everyone was convinced it was a perfect solution, so that's a little bit more of a complicated discussion. But if you're dealing with cold water, so then the issue of bishul doesn't come up. So then Rav Moshe seems to think there were no issues at all, and others thought that it wasn't so pashut, there were no issues, that maybe there were ways around them. But it seems to be generally agreed that the Zohar issue is not the issue. Sammy?
What was the molded issue of taking a lot of water and making it small?
Or making it evaporate, really.
I mean, that's the same thing.
Right, so that's why Rav Moshe didn't seem to worry about it. And, it comes up, when we talked about this a little bit in the context of Choresh, we talked about snow, maybe.
Yeah, so there's a little,
right, it's a little bit of a discussion about changing water into different forms. So there were those who thought it was an issue, those who thought it wasn't an issue.
That was only by taking an
active.
I mean, at least.
Crushing ice.
Oh, right, the crushing ice,
right,
and taking out the defense of the dosh.
That's making it from ice where there's something inside. This is just making.
Yeah, well, then again, I think Moshe would agree with you. That's why you wouldn't. Wouldn't invoke it as a concern. In the Sefer Tal Oros, he discusses a chumrah, and he says if you have clothing or the like that you want to hang out outside because you want it to dry out or it's all dusty, and you want the wind to have a positive, want the air outside to have a positive effect on it, then he thought that this was a concern that was related to Zohar. So Rabbi Ribiak quotes that in his Sefer, and then in his footnotes he says he thinks it doesn't make any sense. He says it doesn't involve any clear usage of the wind, nothing's moving around. He doesn't see why that should really be the case. But he brought it anyway in English for a couple of reasons. One is that the Sefer that mentions this, the Tal Oros, so he also invokes Uvda Dechol, a concerned Rabbanah, that's there, and we've discussed in the past, it's a little bit of a question, what exactly is the gather of Uvda Dechol? I'll say a little bit, it's a very big question. What exactly is the gather of Uvda Dechol? We don't really have a clear definition of what constitutes these types of prohibitions. So you find the later svarim suggesting things, and we have to figure out whether they're applicable or not. Some have suggested that Uvda Dechol is something that looks like a malacha, is not really a malacha, but has enough of the appearance of one to be not Shabbistic, but not enough to be a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. So it's not on the level of a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan, but it's a lower level of prohibition, that it kind of looks like a type of malacha. So since here, putting things out into the wind has a malacha component to it, so even though you're not looking for anything to move around, maybe that should also be a consideration. So he thought, okay, maybe Uvda Dechol is a more compelling issue, and he goes on to say, explains in the footnotes, that he certainly thinks it's inappropriate to be dealing with cleaning up your clothes and the like on Shabbos anyway. He certainly doesn't seem Shabbistic, so he's comfortable bringing it as a prohibition in the section, even though he's not really sure what it has to do with Zohar. He's not really sure how it's an actual violation of that halacha, but the Dechol is a little bit more compelling, and he agrees that it doesn't seem like a Shabbistic thing to do, so for that reason he brought it in the book. Hi.
How did you define it with the Dechol again?
So one of the ways in which there's a couple of different theories as to what Uvda Dechol is, but it seems like among the different theories, if you have something that looks like a malacha, not enough that we're concerned is going to lead to a malacha, but so it's not enough to be a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan, but it's a lower level than a Gzeirah D'Rabbanan, and it has a greater susceptibility to heter. You know, Zera Drabani, you only need a couple of different things to be there in order to be matter it. So here at the hall, we're matter much more easily, you know, with a shinoi. You have something set aside before Shabbat. We have all kinds of easy heterim for the Bechal. So definitely a lower level of concern than something that may actually lead to a malacha. So okay, that he finds is a little bit more compelling, and even more so that since the whole activity doesn't seem Shabbos to begin with, okay, that's enough. That's enough to bring that consideration into play. We mentioned on Thursday that there's a synergy between this topic and the Parsha in terms of the question of Arba, in terms of the question of locusts. So let's say you have a locust infestation, and this is actually a mila to staying in Egypt, right? We discussed on Thursday that in Egypt they had a bracha that was for the purpose of keeping the Makkah more powerful, that after the Arba went away, so no Arba would ever attack the Egyptian crops again. But in Eretz Yisrael, they weren't so lucky, and for one consolation prize to staying in Mitzrayim, you're safe from Arba, but in Eretz Yisrael, you're not safe from Arba. So they had an infestation of locusts over there in Eretz Yisrael, and the question was asked to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and others, so what about using a spray to get rid of the locusts? So he has a couple of considerations. Just parenthetically, one of the considerations is, forget about Zorah, it's a malacha to kill animals. Right? It's a malacha of Shochet. So if you're looking to kill the locusts, so shouldn't that be a problem? So he has a discussion there of various suggestions that were offered. So first the suggestion was made, so what if you throw it up into the air first, then land coming down? So maybe that's already a remove, maybe it's koach kocho, throwing it up, have it land down. And in the context, I think I know what you're going to ask, so let's see, tell me if the question is still there in a minute. So then the question was raised that maybe it's a psik ratio, that it's definitely going to come down and kill them. So Frank writes, well, what are you talking about? It's a psik ratio. Psik ratio only even comes up if you're not trying to do the malach in the first place, if you're not trying to the davar shein on the scabbing. But here, it's a davar shein miskave. You're trying to kill the arbe, so forget about psik ratio. It should be a straight-out malacha, maybe done in an indirect way, but it's not a psik ratio question. So then he goes on to explain that maybe it's not that you're really interested in killing the arbe, you're interested in chasing them away. So if they run away, you'll also be happy. So you're not necessarily trying to kill them, you're doing something which has a chance of killing them. Then we have to figure out, is it a psik ratio, you're definitely going to kill them, or is it only a possibility? It happens to be that Rav Avi Yosef, in the Tshuva we mentioned before, where he's makel against the Ramah, he's talking about a similar situation. But he talks about a situation where you're inside a room, and you have a window open, so they could theoretically fly out. So he also gets into a long discussion about segregation, about suffix segregation, as we discussed when we talked about that. So a little bit, it's a valuable tshuva for its stump, for its segregation discussion. So here, Tzvi Pesach Frank talks about that also. So if we accept this premise, you're not trying to kill anything, you're just trying to chase it away. So then you have to figure out, is it a psik ratio or not in terms of that? And he talks about that a little bit, because it also presumably would be nichole, because even if you're just trying to chase them away, but if they die, then they're definitely not going to come back. So presumably you prefer to kill them than just chase them away. You'll be satisfied if you chase them away, but you'll be happier if you kill them. So presumably it's a psik ratio than nichole, so you have to figure out whether it's a psik ratio or not. And he gets into an interesting discussion there where he notes that you could also ask the following question. When we say something is a psik ratio, how do we evaluate it? Do we evaluate it based on the entire project, or do we evaluate based on every maaser that you do? Because every act of spraying or of throwing the poison into the air, whatever it is, each individual act taken by itself won't necessarily result in any dead locusts. But presumably this entire project of doing this to the whole field, you're going to certainly kill some locusts. So it seems like it's a segregation if you take it broadly, if you take it on a macro level, but if you take every action by itself, it's not necessarily a segregation. So he left that as kind of an open suffix, how exactly to address that. But at the end of his discussion, this is all in the Malach of Shochet, if you want to look it up.
Was Rav Vanya who left it?
This is Rav Chi based on Frank.
Okay.
Rav Chi based on Frank, want to look it up, by the way. So this is his Chuvus. This Chuvus called Har Tzvi. So at the end of Chelek Aleph of the Chuvus Har Tzvi, there's a section called Tal Harim, where he talks about the Malachas one by one. And this is in the Malacha of Shochet, because that's where he starts off talking about the issue first from the question of killing the animals. So then, at the end of this discussion of Shochet, so he also throws in, so then what about, no pun intended, what about Zorah? So what about the concern that there may be Zorah involved? So he notes, he gets involved again, are we worried about the Rama, or are we not worried about the Rama? And here you are, some of those, by the way, I don't know if we emphasize this enough, but some of those who are not worried about the Rama, it's not so much that they reject him because it doesn't match the Borer standard, but any division that's happening when you spit into the air, they assume is something you're not interested in. It's a malach shenashuk alagufa, it's not a point of interest at all. So when you are interested, they get a little more worried. So here, you'd have to want this to disperse, you want this to get everywhere so that the locusts will all catch it, or be scared by it at least, scared off by it. So there is a greater reason perhaps to be concerned about that. But then he says, okay, but what about the Kidule Karka concern? So Kibbe Eger taught us that it's only going to apply when it's Kidule Karka. So then we have to figure out what the poison is made out of. Is it Kidule Karka or not? And again, he leaves that question kind of open as a consideration. I think Jonathan was up first.
For a practical case, if let's say you want to spray a certain area of plant and the wind is actually doing damage because it's blowing away your spray, so you can say it's definitely lo nichalei, and then for those who aren't worried so much about their musk, they would also think that's all right.
Say, why is that lo nichalei? What are you trying to do?
Because I'm trying to spray my plants over here, but it's so windy, when I spray it, it keeps blowing half of my spray away from it, so it's definitely lo nichalei. No.
Except that you want... See, it depends a little bit on how you want to how the spray works. That if it's the kind of spray that you spray inside the same way, right? So it's the force of the spray that's going to get there, and if the plant was inside or outside, it would work the same way, then that's probably true. If you're relying on the wind to carry it at all, even a short distance, then presumably that's more of a problem.
Right.
So that would probably be the calculation. If you could do the exact same process inside, right? So then probably not be a problem. So this is that's how I go about it.
Two questions. So yes. In terms of the Psychratia, so if they die, they're not gonna come back, but it's also annoying to clean them up and to have dead locusts everywhere.
True, but it's less annoying than having to constantly fight them off from to save your field.
But do we take that into account in terms of no dilo nichalei, or do we just say since they're not gonna be there, then that's already to nichalei?
And yeah, you do take it into account, but still net positive, what would you rather? What would this farmer do during the week? And if it was a Tuesday, what would he prefer? Would he prefer to kill them once and for all and then have to clean them up? Or would he prefer to chase them away and have to deal with them again tomorrow? So presumably he would prefer that if he was given a choice, he'd prefer to kill them and have to deal with it, deal with the cleanup, rather than deal with losing his crops or fighting and defending his crops the next day. So presumably the net effect is that it's nichalei to kill them.
Also, the heart speed, he's not concerned about the Rishami that we had with Zoria, of like the Ashram with the worms?
Yes, that's a very good question. So your question was asked by Ritzvig Zilberstein as well. So he is not concerned about Zoraya. What Gil is referring to is that the Yerushalmi has a expansive definition of the malacha of Zoraya, and the malacha of planting. So strictly speaking, we understand it to mean that if you are cultivating growth of a plant, putting something in the ground or doing something to encourage its further growth, so all of that is related to the malacha of Zoraya. But the Yerushalmi, when it lists actions that are included in Zoraya, adds a few more things. And one of the things that it includes is matlia. Let's say you have worms that are inside a plant, and you remove the worms, so then that's also included in Zoraya, which is a surprising idea. It's an unusual type of malacha, that not only are you positively encouraging further growth, but you're also stopping something from getting in the way. so stopping something from hurting the growth. So that's also, according to Rishalmi, included in Zareis. Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein, in his Sefer on Shabbos, his Chashukei Chemed and Mustafa Shabbos, so he raises exactly Gil's question. He says, how come Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank doesn't worry about that? So here, shouldn't we say that chasing away the locusts should be similar to taking the worms out of the plant? Sorry? Right, the question, the whole thing seems to be Mavri Achari. So the worms also seem to be Mavri Achari.
That's right there.
Oh, so that's probably relevant. So he raises two considerations. One's probably more significant than the other. Says that in the case of the worms, you are dealing with the plant itself. Presumably, Zoraya requires you to deal with the actual object that you're trying to grow. So you could plant it, you could water it, you could nourish it, or you could take away its worms. But something that's coming from the outside that's not there yet. So he finds it hard to believe, for example, that if you see a dog running towards your field and you're worried he's going to eat up your crops and you chase him away, it's hard to believe that's Zoraya. That's presumably completely external, and that's not called planting in any sense of the word, so he thinks that would be true as well. I'll take a question in a second. And he also throws in, I don't know how much of a factor this plays, is that taking out the worms is going to be a constant maintenance project. There's always going to be worms there that you're going to have to take out, and that's part of the basic upkeep of the plant. Here, the occasional makkah that somebody's trying to get you to free your slaves and they send locusts at you, so that's not going to be a regular type of basic plant maintenance, so he throws that into the discussion. But presumably the ikker suggestion, this is all his theorizing as to why Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank doesn't talk about this, So probably the key point is that you're not dealing with the object itself, you're dealing with something right now that is not only preventing a negative, but at the moment it's external, and he wouldn't think that that's a problem. He talks there also, Rav Zilberstein talks there also about putting up a scarecrow, which he also assumes may have all kinds of other malachas involved, but it's not going to be a malacha of Zareya, that's something that is more external. Sorry.
We don't pass it like the Yerushalmi. What's the issue?
It's not clear that we don't pass it like the Yerushalmi on that. When the Yerushalmi isn't contradicted by the Bavli, so often we do. That's a question from Michael this morning about when we do and when we don't. So that's a basic Kali Hapsak question. So if we don't find an absolute contradiction from the Bavli, so we prefer to take them all into account. Happens to be in the terms of our malacha here of Zorah, so the point that Akiva Eger and others were making is that it sounds like the Bavli disagrees with Yerushalmi by listing Zorah together with Borer and by the Gemara and Bava Kamma. So when they're at odds with each other, so then maybe we'll favor the Bavli, but when it's not clear that there's a machlokas, so then maybe we should worry about the Yerushalmi. Although maybe you're right, maybe he does. Maybe the reason he doesn't bring it up is because he doesn't think it's an issue, but Rav Zilberstein is assuming it probably is a concern, and therefore that's going to have to have a different explanation, which is what he offers there. The interesting is also a discussion about air purifiers, and I saw at least in one temporary state for the Bikurei Yitzchak, who thought that it wasn't an issue for a number of reasons, and one of the reasons that he raises is that it's not Gedulei Karka anyway. So it's a good question whether that's true or not, it's not Gedulei Karka. What exactly is it that you're dispersing into the air? Some type of plant extract, probably, in order to make things smell nice, unless it's completely artificial, which maybe it is. But it happens to be that the Kenyan Torah B'Halacha, when he was machmir on the spray cans, so he wrote that he thinks that there is an issue of Gedulei Karka as well, that the scented items that are coming out of the spray cans are basically plant extracts. That seems to be somewhat of a mitzias question as to what exactly is going on there, but that's also an interesting point. So one of the major issues, which we'll leave for tomorrow, because it also has to do with the definition of the malacha. What about using wind provided by your body, such as blowing? Again, when it comes to artificial winds, I think the poskim are generally machmir on that. When it comes to blowing on something in order to separate it, it's a little bit more of a complicated discussion. So tomorrow we'll talk a little bit about the Surah of the Malach as it relates to that. So what I want to discuss tomorrow, just to lay it out, is to talk a little bit about the question of Malach HaShem Yitzricha L'Gufa as it affects Zorah and Borer and the like, and basically what the differences are between Zorah and the other two separation Malachos, the reasons that the Gemara says they're counted as three separate Malachos, what justifies that discussion, and that will hopefully serve as a completion to our discussion about Zorah, as well as an introduction and a segue into the topic of Borer, which will come next. So just to quickly review what we spoke about today, and then we'll have Mincha. So we talked a little bit more about the Machlokas, about the Yerushalmi. We mentioned that there is a very strong camp of Poskim that assumes that the Bavli is in disagreement and that we follow the Bavli. And there probably is a somewhat smaller camp that thought that we are choshesh to the Yerushalmi, at least on a level midrabanan. We saw there was a discussion about the confetti, that the Ketos HaShulchan was machmer on that, and a little bit of a question as to whether or not the confetti is considered gedulei karka, which seems to be a concern that most of the poskim did adopt following Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that there is this limitation of gedulei karka. We talked about the question of shaking off tablecloths that have crumbs on them outside in the wind, if the wind is going to play a part in the process. The Maharsham's advice not to do this, a later discussion if this was focused on the Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos or close to Shabbos, and close to Pesach, and is the concern that you davka want to get rid of the chametz, or is it about cleaning the tablecloth, and the whole discussion about that, and is Gedulei Karka involved, and we mentioned the Egle Tal's interesting position that Gedulei Karka limitation would mean that it has to be an issue that was there when it was in its Gedulei Karka form, and not something that was introduced later. And then we talked about the major issue of spray cans, the fact that the vast majority of poskim were makel on this, at least in the abstract, without considering the question of what you're accomplishing with a spray can, but the spray can itself, most poskim were makel, and a minority, such as the Kinyan Torah B'Halach and the Ber Moshe, were machmer, but the overwhelming majority of poskim were makel. But Ribriat makes the point, after as well being makel on that, but makes the point that the Venturi sprays would be different, and you're encouraged to look in that book if you want to see diagrams and pictures of what exactly we're talking about. And he also mentions that turning your faucet into a spray mode, he thinks, is completely mutter and doesn't really have any overlap with the malacha at all. There's no wind, there's no lekarka, there's no brera, there's no anything that would necessarily be a cause for concern. And then adding water into a cold water vaporizer, here again, Reb Moshe Feinstein and many others were makel. In terms of the Zorah component, it seems everybody was makel, even though there were possibly other considerations other posts can write. And if it's hot water is involved, then there's definitely a Bishul consideration, which it could be there's a way to deal with, but that was a whole different topic. And we mentioned the Tal Oris's Chumrah, that to spread out your clothes in the air for them to freshen out is a concern, which Ribbiat thought was a surprising issue, but if you focus on Udu L'chol, maybe he could hear it, since he thinks it's not Shabbistic anyway, but he doesn't really understand where the Zorah component comes in. And then we talked also about Rav Tzipei Stas Frank's tshuva about getting rid of the locusts and under Parshas Bo, and the three considerations that are relevant there, only two of which he talks about. One, the concern of Shochet, and the assumption that they were not intentionally insisting on killing the locusts, just trying to chase them away, so then it's a question of whether the killing was a psik resha or not. And in terms of Zorah, so they thought there was even more reason to worry about the Ramah and the Rishalmi, because here you are davka interested in the poison being dispersed, you're not just expelling it. And the question he was interested in is whether or not it was Gedulei Karka, an open question. And then we mentioned a question he does not discuss as Gil raised, and if it's a Gazilberstein raised, that it sounds like from Yerushalmi maybe this should be a concern of Zoraya, of planting, but Gazilberstein suggests that maybe the reason it isn't is because you're not dealing with the object itself, you're completely external to the object at the moment. And then we said we'll pick up yesterday with, among other questions, the issue of whether blowing with your lungs is comparable to throwing something out into the wind, a major issue that we will pick up on, God willing, tomorrow. Okay, so we'll dive in now.